that as it sounded, like this is a bad place to be, and that's a good place to be. It's all a matter of perspective, I think. Isaiah 55, verses 8 to 9 says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Worth. How does God determine worth? How do we determine worth? By what standard do you think something is worth a lot? What criteria helps you tell the difference between something that is worthless, something that's worth a lot, or something that is priceless? Up on the screen, we're going to show you a bunch of pictures, and they are pairs, kind of different ways of seeing worth, maybe. You'll see some pictures that you kind of gravitate to and say, oh, that's high worth, and maybe others that you think, no. We've got pictures of coffee. That's Tim Hortons, and then that's the Eco Cafe in St. Jacobs, so obviously you know what I value as worth. But it's all personal. We've got Jeff Bezos, who is the richest person in the world. If you've ever bought anything on Amazon, you've given that guy some money. He's got a lot of it. And beside Jeff is Malala, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014 as a representation of her struggle against the suppression of children and young people for the right to education. Now, if you move over, you've got your classic Ford F-150 truck. And then under that, you've got Elon Musk's brand new, what looks like a moonwalker, but it's a truck and it's fully electric. Different values. You've got some handbags. The one on the left has a V on it, so it's worth a bit. And the other one is a recyclable grocery bag. And then you've got a couple of pieces of art. They both look maybe about the same quality, but the one on the left is worth $67 million. And maybe the other one is priceless. I don't know. Another way to think about this is it worth it to jump out of an airplane for the thrill of the experience if you might, that might be the last thing you ever do? A lot of people say yes. Is the thrill worth the risk? In a world of cheap knockoff products, do you think the real thing is worth the extra expense? I just received an email last week informing me that MCC's 10,000 Villages stores have had to shut down across Canada due to financial strain and issues because not enough people were desiring to purchase fair trade products to keep them in business. And this is a decision that will affect thousands of vendors all across the world in some of the poorest areas in the world who relied on access to 10,000 Villages markets. I also read an article in December citing a study from the Fraser Institute that said that less than 20% of Canadians donated to charity in 2017. Less than 20% donated anything to charity in 2017. And that was a 20-year low. Now, perhaps I'm reading too much into these things. There are likely lots of reasons contributing to these two realities. But maybe it's because some people are losing sight of the true meaning of worth, of what it is to have true worth. To further provoke us, I have a video from a show called Black Mirror, and this is kind of like a social critique, and the episode is called Nosedive, and it's about imagining a world where the social media that exists today continues and expands its influence and its effect and impact on society. And so take a picture at this utopian view of our future, maybe. Crank the volume up. Maybe turn the light off. Thank you.
And that's one brush sweep. You want a cookie with that? It's on the house.
Sounds awesome. See you tomorrow, JJ.
See you, Lacey.
Oh, saw your boy in the fire hat just now. So cute.
Yeah, he's really something.
So for some of you, you might watch a video like that and just be like, oh, that sounds fun. But for others, it might just like creep you out to no degree. And the music is sad. And she types heaven and the coffee tastes terrible. She's so careful about the cookie because she's so careful about how she is viewed by her others, her community. The episode's called Nosedive because it doesn't stay this pretty forever. And things go very badly. But I show this just to talk about this idea of worth. How do you determine worth? And how does God determine worth? This three-part series delves into those questions. May we have an encounter with the values of the kingdom of God and so encounter God. Isaiah 55, 8 to 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. We'll now turn to the short encounter in Luke of Jesus and the widow's coins. As Jesus looked up, he saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. So Jesus looked up and saw the rich and their gifts. One of our modernisms that continues to fill me with a sense of awe is that we have found ways to monetize fame and influence at a micro level. And it's truly fascinating how quickly it has changed how we behave, how we live, how we shop, how we interact, and dare I say, what we value. Up here is another few images. Just run through it at the top. Anyone know who that is? Oh, you're making Christina feel a lot better. Nobody knows who that is? 100 million subscribers on YouTube. That is the most popular YouTuber that exists in the world. His name is PewDiePie, so maybe that's why you don't know him. The second picture is a picture of a platform that 16 million users go to every day for entertainment. What are they doing? They are watching other people have fun. And you can make a lot of money just streaming video games, yourself playing, and then other people watch you. So as an aside, kids love this idea, this new economy, because it flies in the face of everything parents have said forever, which is, you'll never make a living playing video games. It's a waste of time. And now kids are like, ha-ha, we found a way. And it's by attracting enough eyeballs that people will pay you to play video games. Fascinating. There's actually a new job that you can aspire to. Many people do today. It's called being an influencer. Being an influencer. That's the title. It's a pretty big deal these days. You can look it up. If you've figured out how to build enough influence, if you've attracted enough eyeballs to your page, to your blog, to your video channel, you can make a living and a very good one. Wikipedia says this about influencers. Social media influencers establish themselves as opinion leaders with their followers and may have persuasive strengths. So you want to know what their strengths are? Attractiveness, likability, niche expertise, and perceived good taste. That's what it takes to be an influencer. The interactive and personal nature of social media allows parasocial relationships. You ever heard that before? Parasocial relationships? Kind of sounds a little bit scary, actually. To form between influencers and their followers, which impacts purchase behavior. Influencer marketing on social media reaches consumers who use ad blockers. This is incredibly valuable to our modern economy because people will choose to go to these people to tell them what to buy. So how powerful those influencers are becoming in our society. The bottom picture there, you're wondering who that is? That is Logan Paul. He found fame making 7 to 9 second videos on the now defunct platform called Vine. And he is now a main event professional boxer because enough people wanted to see him get beat up for real. He's kind of a bit of a villain, and it worked in his favor. If you can attract enough eyeballs, you have worth in the new microeconomies of the internet. In these first two verses, we see Jesus drawing a comparison, forcing the disciples to consider a contrast. And likewise, this contrast forces all of us to pause, to look again, to see with his eyes what worth really looks like. He sets them up. He shows them what's normal, what the pervading wisdom of the age is. And he knows the disciples are no different than anyone else. They want to see Logan Paul get beat up just like the next guy. So these people come and they give their gifts. And the disciples, like everyone else, says, look at their wealth. What good can be done because of them? They're so generous. I kind of wish I was like them. They're righteous. They're valuable. They are worthy of honor. And in stark contrast, 2 simple light copper coins are dropped into the temple treasury. Did anyone even notice? What's the use of that widow's insignificant little gift? Why does Jesus point out the widow? Well, because it happened and he was moved, but also because the widow herself is seen as insignificant in that culture. This is a double emphasis on worth. The insignificant one is giving insignificantly, and this makes logical sense. A widow is a burden more than anything on society. Someone society, and indeed the temple itself, had to care for, had to handle, had to manage. And perhaps she's even seen as foolish for giving away what little she had to the temple as worship. The widow's two mites, or two coins, are actually called leptons. These were the smallest denomination coin of the day in Judea. There are actually thousands were made, and you can still find them today. That's a picture of what they look like. They're a little worn out, but they were just everywhere. They were plentiful. The coin is worth about 1/128th of a denarius, and a denarius was a day's pay for a common laborer. So 1/128th of a day's pay. I tried to do a little bit of math for us. I don't know. This is not going to work totally, but to me, it comes out to about $3 to $5 or lunch at Tim Hortons. Now, could she have spread that kind of money over a week by buying rice and potatoes and stuff? Yeah, she probably could have eaten for a week on this money. So it's not a ton, but it was a lot for her. Verse 4 says, all these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she out of her poverty put in all she had to live on. One commentator wrote that Jesus commends her for giving all she had to live on, even though the Old Testament law only required 1/10 to be given to the temple. The point was that her generous spirit commended her behavior, especially since it showed her willingness to make a significant sacrifice in her desire to be rich towards God. Perhaps she did not eat for days afterwards. This is a sincerity of faith. Her faith is sincere. It's authentic. It's real. Maybe she shouldn't have given. Maybe her gift didn't make a big impact, but we can't deny that her gift was sincere. She was going all in. We're going to be looking at the immediate context this morning for some help, learning about this passage. And in the previous chapter in Luke 20, there's a heated contrast contest between Jesus and the teachers of the law. They're challenging his authority. They're trying to trap him in a teaching that will discredit him because he's picking up steam and they want to knock him off. And so they're in this contest. And it says in Luke 20:20, it says, keeping a close watch on him, on Jesus, they sent spies who pretended to be sincere. So some of these people who want to knock Jesus off, they go in masquerading as disciples, as people who want to learn, and they come under him and pretend to be sincere, and they say, teacher, teach us. And all the while, they're trying to trick him. They're trying to give him a question that corners him and puts him in a box that he can't get out of. They're spies, and they're not sincere. This sincerity is one of the big things that Jesus is highlighting in the lesson from the widow about worth. And it adds emphasis to the contrast between the religious leaders and the humble, faithful people that they had been called to shepherd, but weren't. And then also in verse 45 and 47 of Luke 20, it says, while all the people were listening, Jesus said to his disciples, beware of the teachers of the law. Another rendering would be the scribes. They like to walk around in flowing robes and love to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely. Sincerity, honesty, faithfulness. These are the virtues and values that are being contrasted. Between those who love to be seen as righteous and those who God sees as worthy. And notice also the pointed remark about devouring widows' houses. What do you suppose that means in connection with this story here? Is part of it that while Jesus notices this widow's gift and her plight, that those in the temple, those who are receiving these gifts, do not? That they would happily take the benefits of a widow's gift, even if it meant her financial hardship? Is this the deeper story happening in this encounter? One commentator said that the religious officials of the day, instead of helping the widows in need, were perfectly content to rob them of their livelihood and inheritance. The system was corrupt, and the darkness of the scribes' greed makes the widow's sacrifice shine even more brightly. How do you feel about the widow giving her 2 coins? How does it sit with you? How do you feel about it? Do you want her to? Do you say, amen, sister? Or do you actually want her not to? Do you want her to have more? Where does that sit with you? First thing I want to say from this passage is that big idea would be that God sees what humanity overlooks. Jesus reveals that the 2 coins are all she had to live on. And the word for live in the Greek is this word bios. I was wondering if it was related to the computer, but it's not. It's a totally different thing. So when I looked it up, this Greek word bios, what it means kind of helps us, though. It says, properly, bios means God's gift of physical life. It animates all creation to live and move and have its being, as Acts 17 says. And figuratively, this bios means the way a person invests, spends the gift of physical life. Invests and spends their physical life. That's interesting. Bios is the root word of our word biography. The story of how one has spent their life. So at one level of this interaction, Jesus is contrasting people who do their duty, giving what is expected of them. I want to clarify, he's not judging those people, those rich people who give what they give to the temple. He's not judging them. He's not saying they're doing the wrong thing. It's just a contrast. Simply, their gifts are at least, at some level, from a position of wealth, and they have at least this other motive. Maybe it's lying beneath the surface, maybe it's right up top, of being noticed, of being known as worthwhile and generous people. Some of these people's gifts, they were so wealthy, it would have been like a processional through the city. They would have processed with their people, kind of like, I don't want to use Aladdin again, but just the sense that we're giving this massive gift and everyone knows and kind of people are standing off to the side maybe and clapping that they have come to give their gifts. And they're contributing to a religious system. They're being faithful in the eyes of the leaders. They're acceptable. They're likely considered devout for their gifts. Nothing wrong. However, Jesus makes it a point to point out the woman's gift amidst these other gifts. God recognizes and he sees giving in faith. Here was a woman in need of receiving charity, yet she had the heart to give. Like the widow of Zarephath, who gave her last meal to Elijah in 1 Kings, the widow in the temple gave away her last means of self-support, her bios. And Jesus notices the costliness of the woman's gift. Not the quantity, but the costliness. The woman gives all she has to live on. The worth of giving out of our bios back to the things of God is remarkable. Jesus notices it, and it moves him. That moves him. It has to be said that this kind of teaching where we commend the widow for her sacrificial giving, and then we commend one another to go and give sacrificially, that has to come with a bit of a disclaimer. Absolutely, it can be read. It's there. It's in this short encounter. It's on the surface. It appears to kind of be a story about that, about how we give to God and what God values in our gifts. And I'm encouraging us. Let's notice that. Let's take from that. But that's certainly not all that's happening here about worth. It's likely not even the main thing that Jesus is doing. So let's keep going. You might notice I skipped verse 3. Let's go back to verse 3. Truly I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. First thing to notice about that short verse is that it begins with the word truly. And whenever Jesus says this, you're reading the gospel, whenever Jesus says truly or truly, truly, I tell you, it's a rabbinical formula. It's like when you were in high school or university or college or something, and your teacher all of a sudden would kind of change their tone. Maybe they're kind of reading, and all of a sudden they would say, did you catch that? Or pay attention to this. And your brain would just go, uh-oh, pay attention to that. Why? Because that's going to be on the test. It's teacher code, and you pick this up. Many of you did, some of you didn't, and maybe you should have. Truly, I tell you, this will be on the test. This is life. This is truth. This that I'm showing you, this is why we are here, sitting in front of the temple. This is what I'm striving to make you see. This is so very real. The widow put in more than all the others. More and all. These are words about worth. They're completely upside down. They're reversal. This is a revelation of the mind and the heart and the way of God. God's view of worth is different than our own. So a second idea to take from this text, one way to say this might be that God sees worth clearly. He isn't distracted by amounts, by monetary value. He isn't impressed by the big things, the houses, the fancy cars. At another point, it says that he is no respecter of persons. He doesn't see a lineup of people and be like, whoa, there's Trump, there's Bezos, I better pay attention to what they say. It's just not how he operates. As I hinted at before, on the surface, the passage looks like it's about the widow. It looks like it's about being generous, and it is on the surface. But underneath that, Jesus is doing something more. He is judging worth as it relates to the system, to the temple, to the whole scene that's happening in front of him. And it's amazingly counterintuitive and freeing that in God's economy, in the way that God values worth, our worth is not based on the size of our gift. That is meant to be freeing. That is good news. God sees our acts in devotion and values them all. In God's economy, even humble acts of devotion are valuable in our Father's eyes. $3 to $5. Lunch at Tim Hortons. This is one idea about worth that we can take home this morning. We can chew on. We can try to figure out how to live into that. A third idea from this text is that God also sees the plight of the poor. He calls out the problematic ways we often systematically place worth in the wrong places. We do this as a society, systematically placing worth in the wrong places. Sometimes the very systems themselves miss their true worth, what they were designed to do in the first place. This temple where the gifts are given, one of its chief purposes was to care for the widow. That's why the temple was there in the first place, to care for the widows and orphans. Do those who are counting the offerings notice the widow? Do they know her? Do they know, as Jesus does, that that is all she has? That's not a tithe. That's everything. Do they know that? Do they know and refuse to help her? Or do they not know and so miss the signs that this woman needs the help most of all? So Jesus is gazing on the temple with his disciples, and he finds this moment to teach them about worth. In the verses leading up to this, in Luke 29:9-19, Jesus has told a parable. He tells a parable about a vineyard and its hired tenants. And he highlights that the tenants of the vineyard, the workers, are willing to beat and kill in order to take the power of the rightful owner of the land and claim the benefits as their own. And he's talking about the religious leaders as he gives that. That they care more about what's in it for them than being good and faithful to their calling, to why they are there in the first place. And immediately before the widow's coin story, Jesus has called out the temple scribes, as I mentioned earlier, that they devour the houses of widows. Jesus says, beware of the abuses of religion. Then immediately after the widow's coins, the topic shifts to this. And while some were speaking about the temple, that it was adorned with precious stones and votive offerings, he said, as for these things that you see, days will come in which not one stone will be left on another stone that will not be thrown down. It's kind of like he is saying, you still, you're looking for worth in the wrong places. You're missing it. Our widow's coin passage comes in a series of successive passages where Jesus is contrasting worth. And Jesus needs his disciples to see what God considers worthy, that it's not at all what they had been taught. A religious system that spends its resources on itself instead of on the needs of the least of these has lost God's view of worth. So maybe you're here this morning. If you're here this morning, you feel a bit like the widow. You can kind of really understand what it's like to be this widow. You wish you could give more, but really you know, you believe that you need to receive. You're in a place where you need to be receiving. Just invite you to talk to us. We at The Gathering are not here to put jewels on our building. We don't own this building. We want to see the needs. We want to understand the needs, and we want to meet them if we can. It's something that this church has felt called to from the very beginning. Our men's group, which meets on Tuesday, has been studying the book of Colossians together. And right in the first session, we got deep into this discussion of worth, what it means to live a life worthy of God. And Louis Giglio, who's leading us through this study, thanks, Louis, says this: a worthy life looks like a transformed heart, which overflows into how we treat other people, to what we say, and our attitude towards the things God asked us to do. And then he says this: this is made possible through Jesus. He made a way for us to be reunited with God and gives us the Spirit so we can grow in maturity. So this way of seeing worth is about maturity. It's about growing in maturity. Then he says, that's not to say we have to strive to be perfect in our own power. Rather, the Spirit fills us and gives us all we need to pursue maturity in Christ. It all begins with the knowledge of God. Seeing God's way of worth, seeing things through his eyes, begins there. This Jesus who calls out the corruption of the temple, who contrasts what worth looks like in the world and for God, is the Christ who believed we were worth it. That's pretty great. He came to earth to show us how God truly sees us, that we are worth his love. In Philippians 2:7, it says this. It says, instead of this, of his own free will, he gave up all he had. Jesus gave up all he had. He took the nature of a servant. He became like a human being and appeared in human likeness. So Jesus was willing to let go of all the privileges of his divinity to incarnate and come near, to become flesh. And then when he had done all of this, he was also willing to give up his very life, his bios, what he spent and invested his life, to demonstrate the immeasurable love of the Father, a love that extended to even those who openly denied him. So even those who were killing him at that time, he says, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. That's how Jesus spent his bios. And so as I was kind of going through my sermon this morning, it just hit me. I'm like, oh my goodness, I think that when Jesus is in front of the temple and this widow goes and gives the two coins, Jesus is saying, that's me. I identify with this woman. This is what I'm doing. I'm coming to the world and I'm giving my offering that people don't notice and they don't see how valuable it is. I'm dropping my two coins in, and who's going to notice that what I've just given is the most important thing that's ever happened? So he's connecting with this widow, and he's telling his disciples, look at the widow, because the widow is him. in a sense. That was just this morning, so I didn't do a lot of theological thought. Pretty sure you can run with that. Pretty sure. Final quote comes from Richard Rohr, and he says, "Brothers and sisters, you and I don't deserve anything, anything. It's all a gift. But until we begin to live in the kingdom of God instead of the kingdoms of this world, we think, as most Christians do, exactly like the world. We like the world of seemingly logical equations. Basically, to understand the gospel in its purity, in its transformative power, its ability to change things for you, we have to stop counting, measuring, and weighing. We have to stop saying that I deserve and deciding who does not deserve. None of us deserve. Can we do that? It's pretty hard unless we've experienced infinite mercy and realized that it's all a gift." So a few questions as we leave this morning. What is the condition of our heart when we give? That's an obvious takeaway from this. What is the condition of our heart when we sacrifice for his kingdom's purposes? What's going on within us? A second question is, are the companies, the systems, the institutions that we support worthy in God's eyes? Do they devour widows' houses? Or are we generous in ways and places that have real worth? And then what gift, no matter how seemingly insignificant, can we start with as a natural response to God's lavish view of us as being worth it? Amen.